The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. We are off into a new week. Here on Monday, we will have Jody Jackson. Jody and I, every week, brought to you by Rock and Protein, we will dissect the Cardinals. There's a joke there somewhere. Man, that was just a dreadful... Good thing I had other things going on. God created a DVR for a reason. And then we'll have John Wilner Hotline, because ASU U of A is going to be very meaningful. There's meaningful and there's very meaningful in my world. And we'll talk some college football coaching carousel with John Wilner, nationally syndicated columnist, as we do every Monday. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always and through the years. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. Chairman of the board is the Iron Man, Jared Nielsen. Anything goes wrong, it's his fault. It's not his fault that the Cardinals were so wretched yesterday. I was texting with some friends. I was working on shows yesterday. I did not go. Quite frankly, I see no reason to be sitting there in a hermetically sealed press box and to go downstairs where everybody is getting the same content. And there's just nothing that is new. I don't see the point in it. When you've been outscored 85-44 over the last 2 weeks, and this is the direction that the franchise takes, we're on course for yet another implosion when it comes to the coach. It's just the way things are with this owner. Every 2.5-3 years, unless it's Arians or it's Wiz, and even then, it's the we're going to go the inexperienced head coaching route. We're going to give somebody an opportunity, the hot coordinator. We're never going to bring in a big name here to Arizona like Sean Payton. We're not going to bring Bill Belichick in. Sorry to disappoint you on social this morning. It's not happening. This is what we have here. This is just what it is. If you go to the restaurant and you taste the restaurant food, and you know what the food is like, and it's not great, but you keep going back because you don't have any other options, that's a you problem. What we have here is that's what's going on. There's no other options if you want to be the hometown, support the hometown team, which is why, from my understanding yesterday, was another sellout for the 49er fans. Now, I don't know about Jacksonville. Jacksonville comes in here this Sunday. They're a who cares team in the NFL grand scheme of things. They're not the Cowboys. They're not the Raiders. They're not the Bears. They're not the Packers. You know what I mean? Where the stadium is packed in Glendale with fans of the other team because fans here sell their tickets. Or there's a few fans that'll go because they are diehard fans, as they like to tell me. And guess what? You've died hard. The 11 penalties at halftime yesterday, the opening kickoff almost being returned, they just simply weren't ready to play. And you can hammer away and hammer away and hammer away, but this is not a fix it. This is a culture deal. This is a culture deal top to bottom. And I get tired of doing this topic in this show, but when it comes to the hometown heroes on the gridiron, the NFL, that's what it is. When things don't change, other than the players go through, it is something that is at the top of the top of the top of the franchise. It just is. So I need Michael to disappear, but he's not going to. Doesn't mean he has to go sell the team. Just please disappear. He's not going to sell the team. So for people that say, well, Michael's got to sell the team. No, unless the commissioner were to step in and say, you know, like the Daniel Snyder deal, or if it's something over in the NBA, if it's off the court, off the field, if it's just simply we have an ownership group that doesn't get it in Arizona, but Michael's brought Super Bowls here. So you have to look at it from that perspective. The regular season product, usually by the time we get to, in the way the NFL set up, most every team is eligible for the playoffs until, you know, mid-December, early December. Not here. Well, we have 7 games left. And if we win all 7, you tell me. You know, you have Jacoby Brissett. I hope his life insurance is paid up. He's having to run for his life. And throw, oh, it's look at the numbers he puts up. I love Jacoby Brissett. I love that signing last year. I love that signing even more when yesterday he said, I'd rather throw for 4 yards and win. Because we're in an age where in sports, it's I got mine and who cares about the final score. That dude balls out. That dude balls out, okay? And it's not me sitting here saying it's one guy's fault. Whole bunch of people. They made some smart moves. We're going to talk to Jody about it here in a few minutes, but they made some smart moves in the offseason. Calais Campbell is a smart addition. Josh Sweat, smart acquisition, in my opinion. Bring in some veteran guys. Bring in some guys that show the way. Those guys can only do so much, though, when the first-round picks that they take on the defensive side of the football haven't done much. Or the first-round star receiver hasn't really been consistent. And then they're in a division where there are ownership groups that are committed to winning, and they have the culture. And so every year you're trying to get over the top. The Seahawks can have a dip, and they come right back. The Rams can have a dip, and they come right back. The 49ers can have a dip, and they'll come right back. So where does that leave the team that's here in Phoenix? What we have, what we're dealt with. That's where it is. So rather than sit here and just continually hammer away on them, because it does no good, and they don't care. I mean, we've got it all figured out. We own an NFL team that's worth billions. It's very, very sad situation here in Arizona. I think that's the best way to put it. I watched the Suns last night. The Suns are actually fun. They are fun. I don't know if they're going to be good over the long haul. They're playing right now without Jalen Green. Last night, they choked a game away against Atlanta. It's a game that they should have won. Let the Hawks go on a 38-15 run. But, there's parts of this team that I do like. Like, you can see them and say, hey, they actually have a man in the middle. Hey, they actually have some pieces over here. And I like the Dylan Brooks move when it was made initially. Now, if the team goes the wrong direction, he will be a valuable trade piece. He will be. On the college football front, we will have a meaningful teacup game. John Wilner will join me in a few minutes. We are excited to have a teacup game between two schools that are relevant, not two schools who stink. And people say, well, as long as we beat the U of A, it's a great season, even though we're 3-9. Makes zero sense, just so we're clear. We love sucking. It does, as long as we beat the neighbor across the street, we'll suck even more. No, it's can ASU get through a trap game this week at Colorado? And U of A, it's their home finale against Baylor. Both these teams should be rolling in to Tempe with 8 wins. That is going to be exciting. That's going to be great. And ASU still has an outside shot of being in the Big 12 championship game. Imagine if all ASU has to do is win over U of A to get into the Big 12 championship game, and U of A beats them. Now, that would be, for a U of A fan, sweetness. But ASU rolls over U of A, goes another big. That's the type of stuff that I want. I want that every week. I don't want 17 penalties by the pro team. I just don't need that. I just don't need that slop. All right, Jody Jackson is next, and then we'll have John Wilner. I'm Brad Sussmat. Jody Jackson with us here for a couple of minutes, as always, on Mondays, brought to you by Rockin' Protein. We appreciate Rockin' Protein and their support. You teach at Cronkite, right? You're at Cronkite?
I do.
Yeah. So there's people that are watching, they're like, oh, I wish I were Jody Jackson or maybe Brad Sussmat or, much bigger talents, whatever. Here's how it works on Mondays in the home city after the NFL team gets absolutely annihilated. What happened? Well, if they could just turn this around, well, if they could just figure this out, and you end up doing this, not just for 1 year, 5 years, 15 years, 30 years in my case, this is the same script, okay?
I'm not sure there's anything in my syllabus that can figure out exactly how to handle it, right?
Because I like to joke, it's seeing the Titanic. We know what happens at the end, the boat sinks. And every year, outside of a few, this is what happens. Like this team, Jody, to be outscored 85 to 44 in the last 2 weeks. Forget about all the penalties on Sunday. Well, not forget about it, but it's like this thing is completely cratered this season. And I don't think anybody expected it to crater like this. I thought they're a fringe playoff team. This would be Kyler's last year. Gannon's got him headed in the right direction. Feels like the staff's fine. Monty's doing some good things. I like their signing of Sweat and Calais Campbell. Makes sense. Some of these draft picks haven't come through yet. But instead, I'm just looking at it like this may be the lowest of the lowest of the lowest, Jody. Where are you at on this?
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't see this coming. I thought, and especially a few of those losses were close. They had lost to San Francisco 16 to 15. They had lost by a few points to Seattle. They had lost by a few points to Green Bay. Then to see the division just come out and wallop them in consecutive weeks like this. Preseason, I thought, at worst, like 7 wins, at best, maybe 9 or even 10. I just think the main, I have thought a lot about it this morning and even last night. I think the thing that this team was really hanging their hat on was the offensive line and the running game. And that has just fallen apart. And I think it is due to the running back. I think in the NFL, people just think like you can plug in anyone back there and they're just going to run the ball. No, it doesn't work that way. But yeah, clearly the offensive line's taken a big step back for whatever reasons. It's really the same guys. And I think Paris Johnson's playing pretty well. But I mean, the other guys, it's just been a lot of mistakes, a lot of miscommunication. And, not having your running backs back there, not having James Conner, Trey Benson. And then, DeMercado and these guys, and Bam Knight was in there yesterday. He was banged up, but he was in there. So it's just been a bit of a mess. That's what they were really hanging their hat on the last 2 years, identity-wise, making it easier for Kyler Murray to do his job. So Jacoby Brissett, now you're in pass all the time mode, and he's up for it. But now you're turning the ball over. And again, we've seen that. There's a lot of good quarterbacks that have no run game that then are, really the scapegoat because they're trying to force the ball downfield. The other thing that's a mystery is the defense, the two core principles, the offensive line and the run game, and then the scrappy defense, that's gone away as well. And so that's the hard part when you look at it with Jonathan Gannon preaching discipline and grit and toughness and things that we saw with this team, things that we saw with this defense earlier in the season, and now that's kind of evaporated. The whole thing has, to use your word, cratered a bit. So there's a lot of questions right now as to, I know he talked about getting up off the mat yesterday. It seemed to be an admission that, hey, now we are on the mat. That's number one is we are on the mat. We are down for the count. Are we going to get up or not? So, a lot of questions, though, and I think, there are a lot of questions as to whether he's the right guy to lead the team again, Jonathan Gannon. I think the guy, I think a lot of us thought he was, and things, but when losses start to pile up, all of a sudden perceptions change.
Well, I think it's that when losses pile up, that's one thing. Because I can go back and say, if DeMercado just takes another step with a football under his hand, they have one more win, and maybe the season pivots a different direction. Maybe. But when you come out on the opening play, the opening kickoff is almost returned, and then you have 11 penalties by halftime, what that says to me is they just simply were not ready to play. They simply weren't ready. And then when you're at 17 penalties, and I have people texting me from the game saying, oh, the referees have it in for us. San Francisco had one penalty. Yeah. But here's the thing on it. They could not stop the 49ers if they wanted to. They opened in the flat to McCaffrey touchdown. There was nobody in that zip code, whatever Glendale's zip code is, around him. So it was miscommunication. It was breakdowns. And so you look at it and say, all right, are we on the typical course where it's 3.5, 2.5 years, and another coach is fired? Do you expect Jonathan Gannon to make it through this season? I would not be surprised one bit if the owner comes down the hall and fires somebody today. Today.
Day. Wow. Okay. We'll see.
And I'm not saying it's Gannon, but the owner,
Yeah.
this is what we have. This is the cards we've been dealt here in Arizona when it comes to the owner. So.
So they're 3-7. Okay. So I will say this. I don't know that I expect anyone to be fired today, but if they only get, you still have 7 games, which is going to fly by. But if they end the season with 4 or 5 wins, I could see a change. I really could. Yeah. And I mean, maybe it does happen. There's a lot of question marks as to, who are you going to go out and get too? Are you going to go with another rising, up and comer coordinator type? Or are you going to go out and get a bona fide coach? I don't know the answers right now. I think the best chance for the team to finish strong is to continue with this group. I do, and I know that's not a popular opinion, but I don't really know how you turn this around, though, especially with some of the key pieces that they're missing.
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett, I hope his life insurance is paid up. Because if he keeps taking the numbers of hits that he's taken, then we're going to see Keaton Slovis. It's just a matter of time. It could have been Clayton Tune last year. And I'm on the side of the street of, if you keep changing coaches and you keep changing general managers and you keep changing direction, this is what you're dealt with. If Josh Rosen works out, we're not sitting here today talking about Kyler Murray. We're probably talking about somebody else at a different position. Marvin Harrison Jr., you'd have to say right now, is a question mark. Yeah, he's looked good for a few games. They haven't put it all together. Their first round picks the last few years, Jody, I'm waiting. You know, I'm waiting. The guys like Calais and Josh Sweat are stopgaps for those young guys to come along. They're good players. But Calais can't be Methuselah, can he? Can't be
Yeah, I mean,
50 out there playing.
no, and he wants to retire, so he's probably
Right.
gone. I mean, Sweat's going to be here, but you know, Darius Robinson really hasn't shown a whole lot. He just hasn't. Walter Nolan, I like what I've seen so far early on. I think Walter Nolan has a lot of promise. But you're right about Marvin Harrison Jr. For a number four, is he going to be a good receiver? I think he will be, but number four overall, you know, that you kind of expect a superstar at that spot. Like you expect maybe, you know, expect a Larry Fitzgerald. Larry might be a tough one, but you know, when you
No,
think
but
of
that's
guys that are
fair.
drafted that high, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, is he going to be that guy? I don't know. Like, because it's been really inconsistent. You see a really good game against Dallas. His dad came out and spoke, and there was that interview, and then he came out and balled out against Dallas, and then he flat out dropped balls against Seattle under a lot of pressure. Like, you have to be physical. You're a big receiver out there. You have to catch balls that are contested. And I
Well,
didn't see him do
Jody,
that.
let me jump in on you on this one. So, okay, I get what you're saying about Marvin Harrison Jr., the number four pick. If you're the number one overall pick, this is not like even watching Kyler on the TV broadcast on Sunday, I'm seeing him sitting over on the bench while the offense is on the field. I don't care whose explanation is that he's going to be over there on the sideline sitting. I don't want to see that. Okay, I want to see somebody who's fully engaged in the process.
Well, now you're opening up a whole nother can of worms on just is the weirdness of that situation also kind of hanging over this team?
Yes.
I mean,
Yes.
that, you know,
I'm
we
not in that
haven't,
locker room, but yes.
you and I talked about it last week. He hasn't spoken publicly. Like,
No.
what is the shroud of mystery? You're hurt. That's what we're told. I mean, if you can come off IR and like under normal circumstances, when he's healthy, he'll come off IR and play. If they're still losing, if Jacoby Brissett, you know, I mean, one thing's for sure, the guy threw for 452 yards and they still lost the game. He set a record for completions in the NFL. NFL record.
Yeah.
No one else has ever done that,
Yeah.
47 completions, which kind of surprised me. But, you know, I feel like Drew Bledsoe used to throw that much, or, you know, Kurt Warner at times, you know, you could name a few guys, Dan Marino, going back to when I was a child. But, you know, that's not, apparently that's the passing game is not the problem. Michael Wilson looked every bit like Larry Fitzgerald yesterday, you know? So that wasn't the issue. So what is the issue? And then I just wonder, yeah, Kyler Murray, that it's just, I'm going to be waiting to hear more on that. I feel like people deserve, we were told he's the franchise quarterback. We were told everyone believes in him. So if that's true, then when he's healthy, he should probably play. Because as much as I think Jacoby Brissett is the better all-around quarterback, you know, at this point you're still he's still on the payroll. Why wouldn't he play? But I don't know if he will. And I just don't really fully understand what's been going on there. But I think everybody knows that Kyler's an interesting guy. You know, you hear him talk, it's a little different than hearing Jacoby Brissett speak. He's not as transparent. He's not as open. He's not as much of a leader.
He's got the organization by the tail. That's how it is, from my view, because he's getting paid and he's not going to go out there and get killed because he doesn't have people all around him. And the organization behind the scenes, you can go back to a few years ago when they leaked out stuff about Kyler and, you know, his habits other than football and playing games and all that stuff. And the
That's where it
contentious.
started, is it not? You know, I mean, yeah.
Yes. The contentiousness. When you float stuff out within the walls of the organization as a way to try to motivate a player, this is what you get. because he's going to get paid. You, on the other hand, are the ones that thought it would be kind of smart to put stuff out there for people to get on his case and light a fire under him. And it's clearly not worked. So, I mean, he can go play shortstop for the Las Vegas A's, if Sacramento A's, if he wants to. But in all seriousness, it's, as I'm sitting here now, Jody, it's okay. As awful as that showing was on Sunday, and as awful as the showing was the previous Sunday, are they going to be able to figure it out against Jacksonville? Because Jacksonville is a who cares game on the circle of the calendar at the start of the season. Oh, that's a win. Well, no, now it's not. They're actually pretty good, and they just
are
out of the Chargers.
I thought the Chargers were going to win that game, and yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguars came out and walloped them. So, you know, there's no gimmies here, and that's going to be very interesting to see. It's going to be a situation where, you know, really, I thought coming out of the Seattle game that this team would be able to muster a lot better effort, that they would come out and be very competitive in this game, and it just didn't happen from the get-go. So this game's going to be real telling, and if they don't, going back to what, you know, then I think someone could be fired on Monday after that Jacksonville game.
Well, and here's the thing. There's not going to be anybody in the stands. Okay, this is not the Cowboys or the 49ers were at the takeover. It's not like the Jacksonville Jaguar fans travel en masse. And in my circles, people in Arizona have flat given up on the Cardinals. I don't know if you're hearing the same thing, but that's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm seeing.
That's really discouraging. Yeah, I mean, I happen to know some diehard fans, so they do still go. But you're talking about the masses. Yeah, clearly, Brad, the masses are... They were told this was going to be year three, and this was going to be, you know, we're going to make the playoffs, and it's going to be great. We're going to take that next step. So it's easy to see. I don't think it's any surprise. And I don't think Michael Bidwell is going to be surprised that people are going to be really upset. You know, the fans are upset about what has gone down this year.
I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
It's Jody Jackson brought to you by Rock and Protein. We're back with more after this timeout. And now we turn our attention to the college platform. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline with us, nationally syndicated columnist, Heisman Trophy voter, of course, part of Sports 360 AZ on the college football, college basketball scene as well. John, I'm excited. I'm excited. I see a teacup game coming where ASU and U of A, this may be the most eagerly anticipated teacup game in I don't know how many years, which means... both teams are in a trap game this week at Colorado for ASU. They're awful. Baylor in Tucson. So let's just, before we get ahead of ourselves, how big would this be for the U of A and ASU, John, to have this type of matchup?
Well, I can tell you exactly how long. And the article that covers that territory will be on the site this morning.
We don't rehearse any of this, just so people know. We're no rehearsing blows. We just fly. So that's great.
As Bill Walton says, save it for the broadcast, right? You used to say that. I actually did a little research. This will be, both teams have 7 wins, even if they both lose Saturday. It'll be the first Territorial Cup since 2014 in which each team had at least 7 wins. And if you remember back in 2014, that was for the Pac-12 South title.
That's true.
Todd Graham against Rich Rod. Arizona won it 42-35. You know, very compelling game. And went on to play in the Pac-12 championship and lose to Oregon. Yeah, it should be really a good game. And impactful for both teams. ASU could be playing for a spot in the Big 12 championship. Arizona could be playing a spot in, you know, in a pretty high-level bowl if they take care of business this week. But, yeah, traps for sure. I think more of a trap for ASU.
Yeah.
Because Colorado, one, is really struggling and also has had 2 weeks to prepare, and that's always a factor late in the season. You know, Arizona has just got so much momentum, and it's their home finale. So hard for me to see Arizona kind of totally overlooking Baylor here.
When Noah Fafita showed up on campus in Tucson, Did you believe that he was the type of talent that could be leaving there as the all-time touchdown passing leader over Willie Tuitama and Nick Foles? Did you ever see that out of this kid?
No, I did not, to be fully honest, right? I absolutely didn't. And he was not, you know, he was considered a good recruit. He's, you know, not like a McMillan, a Tetro McMillan level recruit, at least with the, you know, the folks that I trust in the recruiting world. But he has had one, the opportunity, thanks to Jed Fish, to be a starter for, what is it now, 2.5 seasons. He replaced Delora midway through 2023. And you do wonder, and I've thought about this, what if Jaden Delora hadn't gotten hurt that year? Would Fifita had stayed on the bench the whole season? Maybe Arizona isn't as good. Maybe Fifita then leaves and goes somewhere else. I don't know. But it just tells you how sometimes these things, you need a break or an opening, an opportunity for a player like that to really to blossom for multiple seasons.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes, Wilner Hotline. I want to go national with you. Mike Elko. So here's a name that most people are like, who is that? What is a Mike Elko? Is Mike Elko becoming a hot name out there in the coaching circles? And Texas A&M clearly is a CFP team right now, John. So let's talk about Texas A&M a little bit. What do you see? What do you know?
Well, school record comeback. They were down, 30-3 at halftime against South Carolina. They came back and won 31-30. Just an amazing turn of events, all happening with Elko getting a big fat contract from A&M. He was a hot candidate, 2 years ago at Duke, and A&M hired him, and he has taken them to the next level, and now they're worried about losing him to, like, a Penn State, for instance. So he's yet another coach getting a contract extension in this super hot market. I think the deal's going to pay him around $11 million a year, so he'll be easily top 10 highest paid. When all is said and done, he'll probably be somewhere around top 5 or 6. I think Lane Kiffin could reset the market. He's going to have Ole Miss, Florida, and maybe even LSU after him. We're going to have, there's going to be a couple of days in early December when everything is about Lane Kiffin, because these schools are all going to be going after him. And there's nothing Lane Kiffin will like more than it all being about Lane Kiffin. But A&M locking up Elko, so he's not tempted to leave. Terrific coach, and is also potentially a model for other schools, right? He's not necessarily the hot young coordinator. When A&M hired him, he had done a nice job at Duke. He had proven himself to be a winner as a head coach, and so the risk reduction factor was pretty high for A&M.
What do you think about the job Lincoln Riley is doing this year at USC? We talked about him maybe as a hot seat guy at the start of the year. And this Saturday, he has a game where, prove it, Oregon.
Yep.
And, you mentioned Lane Kiffin's name and being a hot candidate. If I'm USC, I know I've dealt with Lane Kiffin before. But if I'm USC and I don't believe that Lincoln Riley is the answer, he was just a great name out of Oklahoma, but they get blitzed this week, John. Do you think there's something? I'm not going to put Lane Kiffin going to USC, but is there something about Lincoln Riley needing a very good, strong showing this Saturday?
I think so. They are clearly better than they were last year in terms of dealing with all the challenges in the Big Ten, but this is a big test for them. If they go to Autzen and lose by 2 or 3 touchdowns, there's a reset that maybe, they haven't improved as much as it appears after beating Nebraska and Iowa. The problem that SC is going to have, though, let's say, worst case scenario, they lose decisively at Oregon and they turn around and they're deflated and they lose to UCLA in the finale, which is entirely possible.
Sure.
And then they're sitting there and they're 8-4. And USC fans are pulling their hair out, right? But his buyout, and we don't know the exact figure because USC's private school, I believe his buyout will be somewhere around $75, $80 million. An enormous amount, even for USC. Mm-hmm. So I think that they are, even if they want to move on, I think that they are stuck with Riley unless he decides he wants to leave.
Sure.
He says, you know what? I want to stay one step ahead of the posse here. This is the year to go because there's so many openings. It's possible he could initiate a change. I don't expect that, but it's certainly on the realm of reasonable scenarios.
Okay, UCLA, what are you hearing, if anything, about their head coach as a permanent?
Yeah, well, they're making their calls and having the initial discussions, and I would imagine that's very soon after the season finale, Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend, the Bruins will be in fifth gear trying to get somebody hired. You know, Sean Lewis, who's a very good coach, is at San Diego State, is a candidate. I just don't believe UCLA would ever hire a coach from San Diego State. I think they just look down on the CSU system schools. Jamie Chesney at James Madison is viewed as a hot candidate, given what Kirk Cignetti has done, going from JMU to Indiana. Maybe they lightning strikes twice there, and the Bruins get lucky. I think they need to look hard at Jason Eck at New Mexico. I think he's a really good coach, and look at what he's done with the Lobos in one season.
Sure.
But it's hard to know. They could also try to get the hot young coordinator, right? Like Will Stein at Oregon, the play caller at Oregon, who everybody thinks is going to be a good head coach. The problem UCLA has is that they are already struggling. They have already lost ground in the Big Ten. They can't afford to go backward another couple steps. So risk reduction is critical. And I think the way you do that best is if you hire somebody who has been a head coach and won at multiple levels of the game. You know, a good example is Kalen DeBoer. When Washington hired him, DeBoer had won at NAIA and at Fresno.
Yep.
And then he wins at Washington. That's the kind of model. Same with Cignetti. Winning lower levels, winning at James Madison before Indiana hires him. That's what UCLA, I think, should prioritize.
And, of course, Jed Fish's name will be around there, too.
Well, yeah, I was hesitant to go there. But, sure, Fish will be there. You know, he was a coordinator at UCLA. He was the interim coach after Jim Mora got fired. His family likes Southern California. I don't know exactly what UCLA's offer is going to be. And certainly the Wisconsin loss took a little bit of shine off the Fish train. But his agent works for Casey Wasserman, who is UCLA's biggest donor and leading UCLA's search. So that you have to recognize that the Fish is going to get floated to create a market for Fish, and also to create a market for UCLA. And whether there's a legitimate chance that he's going to end up in Westwood, that I'm not as sure of. But I know that there's a lot of people who would benefit from having Fish's name in the public domain on this UCLA search.
This is why I love having John Wilner. We just got in the weeds. The average person would be like, well, just go get Nick Saban. You know, oh, just like that.
Yeah.
Here's how it works in a coaching search.
Casey Wasserman is UCLA's biggest donor.
Yeah.
Wasserman Media Group. He represents Fish. His one of his lieutenants is Fish's agent. So clearly there's a connection there.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks
a lot, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout.